You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.
Hollywood Scandals is part of the Dark Hollywood Collection in The Reels Files on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes each Thursday. Then go to Reels.com, check the top of the screen, and enter your zip code to find out how you can watch more chilling cases like this when you watch TV. That's Reels.com for the dark crime series and specials you'll find only on Reels Channel.
We're always myth-building. John Lennon built up his own myth.
He was the voice of a generation.
Giving peace a chance and all you need is love. I mean, this is something that has resonated with people.
Grow your hair.
Yes, sir.
For peace. Let it grow till peace comes, you know.
But the public face of peace, love, and revolution was a mask.
He sung about peace but could get in fistfights.
He was a follower rather than a leader, borrowing convictions.
Behind the myth was this incredibly insecure person.
In many ways, John Lennon was very impressionable.
A man without self-control.
His first act as a father is to flee.
He drank, he partied, he womanized. He just went crazy.
He went off and began to just beat this guy to within an inch of his life.
And when the private truth becomes public, it will ultimately cost him everything.
Mr. Chapman shot John Lennon.
Chapman felt that John Lennon's music had misled an entire generation.
December 8th, 1980. Breaking news out of New York City stuns the world.
Former Beatle John Lennon was shot and killed tonight, shot at 11 o'clock in front of his home on Manhattan's Upper West Side by an assailant whom at least one witness said seemed to smirk before pulling the trigger.
The icon of peace and pacifism, violently gunned down by a fan who calls Lennon a phony of the highest degree.
John Lennon's legacy of music is simple, brilliant music.
Beatle, activist, revolutionary. John Lennon is one of the most influential and important artists in music history.
He was at once the most popular guy in the world, but he was also the most artistically sensitive and acute person to be popular in the world.
If being an egomaniac means I believe in what I do and my art or my music, in that respect, you can call me that, you know? And I believe in what I do. And I'll say it, you know.
But behind his righteous persona is a troubled man, crippled by a traumatic childhood.
The root of his unhappiness was losing his mother and father and feeling incomplete. And he never got beyond it.
Most of us were just an accident on Saturday night over a bottle of whiskey.
John Lennon buries the pain of abandonment by spending his whole life building a myth. But the man behind the message will fail to live up to his own ideals.
It seems a bit silly to be in America and for none of them to mention Vietnam as if nothing was happening.
John Winston Lennon is born in war-torn Liverpool, England, to Julia and Alfred Lennon in 1940.
Alfred Lennon is a sea merchant. This is a very common occupation in Liverpool, and Liverpool has been described as a kind of matriarchal society because many of the men in Liverpool are off at sea a lot of the time.
But while her husband is away, Julia Lennon is not the type to spend her nights sitting home alone with her young son.
Everyone describes her as colorful and fun-loving and vivacious, which are all euphemisms for fast-living and loose or having relaxed morals.
When John is five, his father returns home, and soon after, his parents decide to officially separate. They force John to choose one parent and abandon the other.
John Lennon was left with a choice that no child should really ever have to make.
He chooses his father first in the situation, then he runs after his mother. He goes back to Liverpool with his mother, and his mother does ultimately hand him off to her sister.
That would set a path for John Lennon, feeling like he had very little control over his world and what his choices would yield.
July 15th, 1958. The ultimate tragedy strikes. Julia Lennon is struck by a car. She dies instantly. At 17, John Lennon is once again abandoned by his mother.
Julia has a very tragic death, and he describes this as the absolute blackest moment of his life.
So John had lost his mother two times, as he says. So his adult life was spent trying to cope with that.
John Lennon always felt like he was seeking that sort of parent figure, or father figure, mother figure, that he was always sort of trying to find himself, create a sense of identity. Those kinds of losses can leave a person seeking those things for the rest of their lives.
John gravitates toward Liverpool's gritty rock and roll scene, a place fueled by drugs and alcohol.
For John Lennon to start drinking at an early age, there's no question that he had a lot of abandonment issues, that he had a lot of pain.
John, by many accounts, was not a happy drunk. He got into fights, he got violent, and obviously that wit can turn really hurtful.
But in the music, John finds an outlet and a sense of belonging he's never had.
For John Lennon, the dynamic of a band was the perfect setup because what was it? A family. Really satisfied a lot of needs for him and started giving him that sense of identity he so desperately craved.
His early bands are very much the John Lennon band, and it's not until he hooks up with Paul McCartney that he really has an equal.
In 1962, Lennon and McCartney's band, the Beatles, signs a management deal with successful record store owner Brian Epstein. Epstein creates an identity for John Lennon and his bandmates.
Paul, Ringo, George, John.
John was painted as rougher than Paul, George, or Ringo. That he was more pensive, the deeper thinker. Paul was cute. George was quiet. Ringo was goofy. These were very easy cardboard portraits to create.
They created the myth so there was one for everyone out in the audience.
The public's appetite for Lennon, the rock and roller, is insatiable. So quickly and quietly, Epstein instructs Lennon to shed his private persona, that of a husband.
A decision is made that John Lennon should be given the persona that he is not married. As a matter of fact, in many of the press kits, it states that one of his hobbies is girls.
Did your wife enjoy it over there?
She loved it. Who?
Don't tell him he's married. It's a secret.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry about him.
John really didn't take marriage seriously. He may not have known how to take marriage seriously, given his upbringing.
While John's relationship with his wife Cynthia takes a back seat to career, his relationship with Brian Epstein begins to fulfill another void in his life.
Brian Epstein was the ultimate setup for a father figure for John. He was somebody who took such a deep interest in John, and John never got that from a significant male figure, and Brian Epstein stepped into that role.
How could Lennon see that as anything but, oh, here's this guy coming to take care of me?
Spring 1963. The Beatles release their debut album, Please Please Me. And with it, the Beatles become a phenomenon. John is now the frontman to one of the most popular bands in the world. And now also a father.
We hate to think that cycles repeat themselves, but they do. Particularly when there's such primitive patterns like abandonment.
His first act as a father is to flee. And I think there's a streak of fear and insecurity. Nobody fathered me, and so I don't know how to do this. That's embedded deep in that behavior there.
John sees Julian just once in the first weeks of his life. And when the band gets a break from touring, instead of going home, John chooses Epstein.
Lennon announces, Epstein and Lennon are going to Spain together for a holiday. John Lennon's just had a baby, and he's running off with his manager.
Brian Epstein was homosexual, and he was into what people used to call rough trade. He kind of liked these sort of tough working class greaser types. Some people think that that may have been part of the reason for his attraction to John Lennon.
Epstein's affection for Lennon was very strong, so we think there might have been something that happened over there, although Lennon had to firmly deny it.
Within a few days, the story leaks, and with it, John's first taste of scandal.
At McCartney's 21st birthday, this DJ made a comment insinuating John was homosexual. And John had been drinking, and he went off and began to just beat this guy to within an inch of his life. And John stated that he stopped and thought to himself, if I keep going, I'm going to kill him.
1966. 6 years after John becomes a Beatle, Beatlemania reaches fever pitch. $150 million records sold officially makes them the most successful band in the world.
Now you've got someone like John Lennon, who came from such an unstable background and didn't really trust the world, and now the world was laying itself at his feet. I honestly think it was probably way too much, way too fast for someone like him, who probably wasn't really good at regulating his feelings, regulating his relationships. So for as much as he may have enjoyed it, psychologically, it must have felt like a storm.
Lennon is an international superstar, embraced by millions around the world. But soon, John learns that with fame comes controversy.
It's the spring of 1966, and Lennon gives an interview to a London newspaper, and it's a typical celebrity profile.
It was known at the time that amongst young people in the UK, there was a bit of a decline in faith, Christianity, and Lennon made the statement that, at the moment, we're more popular than Jesus. Fast forward to the United States in August, it gets picked up by a teen magazine, Datebook. Datebook doesn't just print it as part of a story, it's on the front page.
John Lennon's words ignite outrage, especially in the southern states of America.
You can imagine the Bible Belt just kind of explodes, that this is blasphemy. How dare he compare himself to Christ?
Doug Layton and I are, as you may have heard, leading a protest against the Beatles because of certain anti-Christian and anti-American statements they made.
A Memphis concert is almost canceled. Well, the concert goes forward and somebody throws a firecracker up on stage. So now the Beatles think that they've been shot at.
He was actually quite unsettled by the intensity of the reaction in the South. And I think he very much resented what was happening to him because he felt that he had not said anything wrong.
Epstein realizes that he has to manage the situation, that promoters are wanting to cancel concerts and stuff. And so Lennon has to get in front of the press and issue an apology.
We meant more to kids than Jesus did, or religion at that time. I wasn't knocking it or putting it down. I was just saying it as a fact.
People from coast to coast tune in for the press conference. And with all eyes on Lennon, the more popular than Jesus incident leaves a lasting imprint on John's psyche.
John Lennon saw right up close, firsthand, here's what happens when you control the message.
You've got a kid who probably felt like no one ever listened to him his entire life, and now all of a sudden the entire planet has stopped to listen. I don't think John Lennon really quite got his power in the world until then.
It's a power that John Lennon will use again and again to shape the public's perception of who he is, even as he continues searching within himself.
John Lennon was constantly reinventing himself. And when you try to do it as an adult, you tend to make a lot of wrong turns around a lot of dark alleys.
...1967. With several multi-platinum albums and nearly 1,400 concert appearances under their collective belts, the Beatles have achieved unprecedented success.
Compared with other people who have recently done the same thing as we've done, this tour has outsold their tour.
But John is still lost, searching for a personal satisfaction, an identity off the stage.
In many ways, John Lennon was very impressionable. He was very suggestible. And I think it speaks to sort of the instability of John Lennon's identity. John Lennon was going to be at risk for constantly reinventing himself. And when you try to do it as an adult, you tend to make a lot of wrong turns around a lot of dark alleys.
John Lennon's next identity will be an attempt to feed his soul. Falling under the spell of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
John just seemed to be looking for maybe some kind of a mentor or a spiritual figure or someone who could give him guidance.
This Eastern thought is looked at as kind of wacko and eccentric and way outside. So here you have the richest and the most famous young British man in the world, and they're going to go start studying an Indian religion.
But that doesn't satisfy our appetite.
August 1967. John Lennon is on a meditation retreat with the Maharishi when his world is about to change drastically once again.
They get this call that Brian Epstein has died, and he's taken an overdose of pills. And this is a very jarring moment for them.
Have you a tribute we'd like to pay to Mr. Epstein?
Oh, we don't know what it's like. We called him, and he was one of us. What? So you can't,
pay tribute in words.
I think for Lennon, this was just another giant accent to the theme of loss and abandonment that had been haunting him ever since his childhood. The Maharishi, in a very ironic sense, with the death of Epstein, becomes another surrogate father figure.
But during a retreat in India, John's public identity as an unwavering disciple of the Maharishi becomes unhinged.
Lennon accuses the Maharishi of having a thing with one of the young women at the retreat. And Lennon's idea is, if he's preaching all this spiritual purity and cleanliness, then how come he has the same base earthly desires, sexual desires that the rest of us have? He's a hypocrite.
I think Maharishi was a mistake, but his teachings have got some truth in them.
What do you mean they were a mistake?
We made a mistake.
John was so upset he wrote the song Sexy Sadie, which he originally called Maharishi. And you know the line, Sexy Sadie, you broke the rules, you laid them out for all to see.
He talked about how the Maharishi made a fool of everyone, and it was a really withering denunciation of the Maharishi.
But on the heels of publicly denouncing the Maharishi for his alleged transgressions, privately, Lennon mirrors the very same behavior.
Well, nobody hates a hypocrite more than a hypocrite.
Lennon finds his new muse by way of London's avant-garde art scene. Enter Yoko Ono.
Yoko Ono was the first woman that really equaled him in his mind. He was knocked out by her.
She had musical talent. She'd been to Juilliard, and she could teach him all about different experimental art movements that she'd been involved with in downtown New York in the 60s.
In May of 1968, a still married John sends his wife Cynthia and 5-year-old son Julian on holiday and begins an affair with Yoko.
He invites Yoko Ono over, and they have this marathon, lightning bolt, lovemaking session that convinces him that he should run away with her.
And now, Lennon is repeating the sins of his mother.
His wife returns from her travels and finds Yoko in her bathrobe in their sitting room, and John acts like Cynthia's an intruder in her own home. But it is how Lennon sends that signal, guess what? It's over.
With Epstein dead, the Maharishi deemed a fraud, and now Cynthia and Julian gone, Lennon embarks on the next phase of his life.
In his first marriage, he seemed to not want to be told very much what to do. With regards to Yoko Ono, I think that he did really value her advice and counsel quite a bit.
Artistic, opinionated, and irrepressible, Ono becomes a combination lover, mentor, and mother figure.
John Lennon said, I'm always looking for my mother. In some ways, everyone's always looking for mom. That one person is supposed to be safe. In John Lennon's case, he's looking for something he never had in the first place.
John and Yoko seemed incredibly mutually dependent on each other. He would get upset if people addressed him individually. He said, no, 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 we're John and Yoko. We're as one.
As Yoko becomes fully entrenched in the emerging persona of John Lennon, the codependence they share bleeds into his public life as a Beatle.
The Beatles looked at their women in a very chauvinistic, very old-school way. They were there to be seen but not heard. So the recording studio in particular was their sanctuary.
She was in the studio all the time. She would offer suggestions about their music, and the Beatles resented this. Paul was more enchanted with going in a kind of a pop direction, whereas John wanted to become a bit more avant-garde and experimental. And Yoko Ono, if anything, probably accelerated that desire in John Lennon.
What about the future of the Beatles? Do you feel that you're still a group? I mean, you've gone through a lot of phases.
Sure. You know, we're closer now, you know, than we ever were.
April 1970, a public announcement that shocks the world.
The event is so momentous that historians may one day view it as a landmark in the decline of the British Empire. The Beatles are breaking up.
I'm not sure there's an example you could cite today that if a band broke up, that would inspire the same kind of worldwide reaction. People were genuinely sad. They were horrified.
But there could never be another Beatles. Never.
Though there are many reasons for the split, angry fans lay blame on Yoko Ono for bringing scandal to the greatest band in the world.
You just can't do it. You just can't let a woman do that to a man, can you?
For John Lennon, that was very destabilizing because this woman, his great love, was being implicated as breaking up another sort of great love for him. So in some ways, he was sort of wrecking his own home.
But Lennon is not looking back. With the world's biggest band in his rearview mirror, Lennon's public power continues to grow.
You miss the old days when you and the other Beatles used to hold press conferences at the Hotel Plaza, and kids used to tear up the street?
No, I can reminisce about it without actually wanting to do it again, you know?
The identity he shapes for himself next will put him in the crosshairs of political scandal.
Nixon was scared to death of this long-haired hippie and his Yoko Ono telling everybody, this war is wrong.
Did you know you can stream Reel's dark Hollywood programs like this on Roku, Fire TV, and Amazon channels? Well, you can. Just download the Reel's app to subscribe. Or check out Reel's on Tubi, Samsung TV Plus, Vizio, and Zumo. Hollywood Scandals comes from the dark Hollywood fans at Reel's channel. To find Reel's in your area, go to Reel's.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen, enter your zip code, and begin enjoying great TV.
'69. John Lennon and Yoko Ono are inseparable, cultivating an image as the love affair of the ages.
He meets a woman he falls in love, but he didn't leave it at that. He spun it into what was supposed to be the world's greatest love story. You could sort of see sort of the narcissism really coming out.
They construct this myth, and it's clear that each of them has something invested in this idea. For John, his first marriage had broken, so he wanted to have the greatest marriage ever.
With his first marriage behind him, under Yoko Ono's guidance, John Lennon's identity evolves. This time, to political activist.
John Lennon was always prone to the influence of others, and Yoko Ono was somebody who brought a lot of influence. She had a very, very strong commitment to the peace movement, and he probably would have said anything and done anything to please her.
Recalling the fervor caused by his more popular than Jesus statement, the former Beatle uses his celebrity to promote his latest persona, adding another layer to the growing myth of John Lennon.
He appears to suggest that this is a rebirth, that he's his new man who's going to take on the world and address the issues that he sees are important.
Here's a person who's actually engaged with the world around him, and he actually cares about how people treat one another out in the real world. And he feels a certain responsibility as a public figure to be open about his opinions about those kinds of things.
But while John attracts the press, it's Yoko who's in charge of crafting their message.
And this is for the world peace, you see.
Yes.
And we're thinking that instead of going out and fight and make war or something like that, we should just stay in bed. Everybody should just stay in bed and enjoy the spring, you know.
John Lennon and Yoko Ono engaged in a bunch of avant-garde flavored protests against the Vietnam War. And I think a lot of those protests were Yoko Ono's idea. John was a brilliant mind, and he's a fascinating character, but he wasn't too super well-informed about politics.
But being ill-informed doesn't stop Lennon from standing on his soapbox.
It seems a bit silly to be in America and for none of them to mention Vietnam as if nothing was happening.
Fueled by Yoko's idealism, Lennon continues to advocate for peace, and the public responds with anti-war fever.
John Lennon was a powerful advocate for the peace movement because of his high visibility and because he had a gift for writing very simple, repetitive anthems that could help sloganize the movement. All you need is love, or give peace a chance, or power to the people.
In 1971, John releases Imagine, a song that becomes not only the quintessential anthem for peace, but also the soundtrack to the Lennon legacy, for better or for worse.
We have Lennon's ideal version of himself in the song. And then people always want that to be a mirror of the way he lived his life.
This dual guy, the guy who sung about peace but could get in fistfights, the guy who said, imagine no possessions, and then, you know, lived in Manhattan in this huge top-flight place. I don't know if it makes him hypocritical or real, you know, more human.
With Lennon publicly spearheading the peace movement against the Vietnam War, the government takes notice.
The Nixon administration and the FBI led by J. Edgar Hoover saw him as a threat. And it was the political nature of the songs. It was his ability to rally people around causes that were not popular with the administration.
As long as there was...
The Nixon administration was scared to death of this long-haired hippie and his Yoko Ono, who writes songs and is telling everybody... This war is wrong.
And we were just promoting peace, like you promote any product. You know, they promote war, join the Marines, join this. We're promoting peace.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that Nixon is so paranoid about Lenin's activism is that there's a whole new class of voters out there who can suddenly vote, who could not vote in 1968, between the ages of 18 and 21. And he's worried that Lenin is going to run the direction off to the left and that he's not going to win re-election.
There was a feeling that John and Yoko actually had the capacity to change the outcome of the election between Richard Nixon and George McGovern.
So what Nixon did was wanted to deport him. I'm going to get you out of my country.
The government goes after Lenin, using any means necessary to muzzle the mouthpiece of the movement.
He can tell that his phone is being tapped. He can tell that people are following around. And Lennon complains to authorities and to his lawyers, and everyone thinks he's gone a little bit nuts. But it turns out it's actually true. And the FBI is keeping very, very close tabs on him and trying to collect information about the bunch of radicals that he's running around with at the time.
But John's idealism is publicly tested. When his visa runs out in February of 1972... the U.S. government turns Lenin's fight to remain stateside into a legal nightmare, even citing a U.K. drug bust from 1968.
The guy that actually got us was a headhunter who's now in trouble for the way he's been getting people. I was planted, Harrison was planted, Mick and Keith were planted, all by the same guy. Now, whether they...
John Lennon spent years fighting that, and it was kind of during that time he was fighting it that he started getting a little more low-key on what he was doing. But the truth was, he was scared.
He wanted a green card, and his lawyer said that you better quiet down. And so that's exactly what John and Yoko did.
And just like that, John Lennon abandons the peace movement he will, ironically, forever come to symbolize.
Instead of really adhering to his views, he actually backed down. He'll go along with the cause until it really kind of became inconvenient.
I want to be here. I want to be able to be here and be in England and France or travel wherever I want.
John Lennon took to politics and then burned out. The same way he took to the Maharishi and burned out. The same way he took to so many other things and burned out. He just dove headfirst and then at some point decided, okay, let's move on.
But his run-in with the U.S. government takes a toll. Unable to sustain the myth he is building, the next phase of John Lennon's search for himself will be a trip to hell and back.
He metaphorically ran his head into a brick wall again and again and again until he exorcised himself.
Future
President of the United States of America.
Richard Nixon wins re-election in a landslide victory against George McGovern. And John Lennon is about to be overwhelmed by scandal.
John and Yoko had been inseparable, pretty much literally, since they were married until 1972, when things were kind of going to hell for them. They had this deportation order against John going on, which was great pressure.
And I take this opportunity to thank all the kids and the fans who wrote to all their senators and their petitions.
Lennon had invested all his hopes in defeating Nixon at the polls is another incredibly naive idea. Anybody with any kind of political calculus in the fall of 1972 knew that there was no chance McGovern was going to win.
I, Richard Nixon, do solemnly swear.
Lennon abandons his activism. But tonight, the consequences of his failure in the political arena are being felt.
John was drinking a lot and he was depressed. And the night of the election, everything had just come to this sort of cataclysmic head.
With his music career in a lull, and now his political effectiveness challenged, John lashes out.
They were at a party in Greenwich Village, and John went into a bedroom with one of the female guests, and they started having sex, and Yoko was right there. They were very loud with what they were doing, and some guest had the courtesy to put on a record to try and drown out the sound of the goings-on in the other room.
It leaves everyone wondering, who is this guy? He's a spoiled, entitled child who doesn't really think about the consequences of his behavior because he hasn't had to. He never had a parent saying, no, that's not really okay.
But unlike his first wife, Cynthia, Yoko Ono isn't going to take John's transgression lying down. Yoko makes a radical move. She arranges for her assistant, May Pang, to have an affair with her husband.
Her idea is that if she lets Lennon get it out of his system, maybe they'll patch the marriage back together. So she literally sets John up with May Pang, who apparently is mortified that this is going to happen, but quickly succumbs to John Lennon's charms.
John and his new lover flee to Los Angeles for 18 months on what becomes known as his lost weekend, an escape from the burden and pressures of being John Lennon.
The lost weekend in Los Angeles was anything but peace and love. Well, it might have been a lot of love, but there wasn't a lot of peace. He drank, he partied, he womanized. He just went crazy.
The world is stunned when the famously inseparable couple breaks up. But for those who knew him well, a more scandalous explanation existed. John Lennon had become an addict.
He's been looking for an excuse to deal with the pain ever since, you know, he was abandoned and started drinking at 14 years old. I mean, heroin was just the next thing on the ladder because all the other drugs didn't work as well. That's why you keep on going to harder and harder substances. There's nothing left.
This was an interesting turning point for John because of the emotional volcano, the internal chaos, the fear, the fame. It just blew up and it blew out of him.
Spring 1974. The famed Troubadour Club on Santa Monica Boulevard. John Lennon publicly and privately abandons his mantra of peace, love, and harmony. He is now only concerned with one thing, John Lennon.
The Smothers Brothers are playing the troubadour. John Lennon shows up with May Pang and Harry Nilsson. Starts to drink, begins to hurl insults at them.
One drink turns to another, and soon the night takes a dark turn.
The manager of the Smothers Brothers comes over to sort of shut him up. John takes a swing at him. The bouncers forcibly move him out. On his way out, some woman tries to take his picture, and John gets her, and battery charges are brought against him.
The addict is a very self-destructive individual. So no matter what you're doing in your addiction, you're going to destroy whatever positive things that you're trying to do in your life.
The liquor really seems to accent this proclivity towards violence. Whenever he drinks, a very violent dark side comes out. And we see that over and over again.
The Lost Weekend, some people say it speaks to ego. Some people think it speaks to John being abandoned. I think he went out there and he drank himself into oblivion. He drugged himself to oblivion. He metaphorically ran his head into a brick wall again and again and again until he exercised himself.
With Lennon's public persona unraveling before everyone's eyes, it is Yoko who finally calls for an end to his Lost Weekend.
As usual, there's a great woman behind every idiot. And she's the one, and she kept me together. You know, I would have fallen apart a long time ago. And she pulled me through it, and here I am. I thank her, and God bless her.
After the worst scandal in his life, John returns to New York and Yoko, where she mandates his next identity.
Yoko Ono makes a deal with him that if we do this, you're going to be the house husband and I am going to be the person in charge of the finances.
After years of trying to have a child together and being told they would never be able to, she got pregnant.
October 9th, 1975, New York City. Sean Lennon is born on John's 35th birthday. While many say Lennon abandoned the responsibilities of raising his first son, Julian, this time would be different. Lennon retires from his public life and replaces it with a nearly solitary one. In the Dakota, a luxury celebrity-filled fortress, with nothing but time to reflect on his life as he raises young Sean.
The amount of living he had packed into those, let's say, 5 years, from 68 to 73, you need about 5 years to recover from those 5 years. They were just trying to try what John called real life, which is something he'd never really known.
Anytime somebody advertises happiness, one of my first questions is, what's wrong?
Mostly removed from the public spotlight, John Lennon will spend the next 5 years caged up at home, recording his innermost thoughts in a private journal that would later reveal what was really happening behind closed doors.
At the point I got the diaries, I'd already been hearing for 2 years about really how screwed up John was. This was not the happy bread-baking house husband you were hearing about. Over the course of the day, he watched a lot of TV, he slept a lot, he wrote in his diary a lot, he smoked a lot of weed. For the most part, he was very solitary. That was the thing that was behind the myth, this incredibly insecure, unhappy person who the people around him seriously doubted if he'd ever make music again or even if he wanted to live anymore.
Still haunted by the loss of his parents, Lennon numbs the pain the only way he knows how.
John Lennon's so-called stable years were actually characterized by the same behaviors he always engaged in. Drug use, infidelity. While he wasn't doing this stuff in a big, public, debauched way, John Lennon was still John Lennon.
He's gone for half a decade. What was he doing for 5 years? He was interviewed by Playboy, and he said, I'm watching the kid and baking bread.
But Lennon is not a house husband. He is a rock and roll legend. And he cannot be contained by normal life. After his years of seclusion, Lennon returns to the public eye, once again a changed man. But the final identity for the man who tried to be all things to all people will be as a martyr.
He felt that John Lennon's music had misled an entire generation, including him.
It's hard not to see Lennon's public execution by a fan as a kind of rock and roll crucifixion.
Fall 1980. After 5 years of dark isolation, John Lennon is ready to be reborn. In an effort to save his marriage and rejuvenate his career, he convinces Yoko Ono to join him in the studio to record a comeback album titled Double Fantasy.
Double Fantasy, the album, was really a love story. It was about love reborn and being reborn. It was recorded in a way where it was a Lennon song, a Yoko song. They called it a dialogue between themselves.
Out of the spotlight for 5 years, the public doesn't reject John. Instead, they seem willing to forgive him for his transgressions. The first single, aptly titled, Just Like Starting Over.
The song Just Like Starting Over was a magical 45. And when that came out ahead of the record, you heard it everywhere. And people totally embraced it.
John makes a triumphant return. In promotion of Double Fantasy, John and Yoko are set to grace the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. Photographed in their bedroom, John Lennon reveals a side of himself to the world that is both honest and raw in its message.
John Lennon is curled up next to Yoko naked. It's a womb-like pose where he's huddled up against Yoko.
And it just sort of encapsulates what their relationship had come to. He was sort of like her child in that picture in one way.
He knew it was a very striking, powerful photograph, and he knew that this was going to be an important symbol of his comeback status with Yoko in this hit album.
December 8th, 1980. John and Yoko attend a recording session. On their way out of the Dakota, John Lennon stops to sign an album for an eager young fan. The fan is Mark David Chapman, who traveled from Hawaii to fulfill what he believes is his destiny.
He had come across The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger. He became obsessed with the book, and Holden Caulfield, who narrates the book, he's against phonies.
Mark David Chapman bought a biography of Lennon and saw all the dichotomies of Lennon's life. How can he preach all of this peace and love, yet still live as a millionaire?
He felt that John Lennon's music had misled an entire generation, including him. Chapman came to believe that if he murdered John Lennon, he would disappear into the book and become the catcher in the rye for his generation.
Nearly 7 hours after the initial encounter, John and Yoko's limo returns to the Dakota, where Chapman is still waiting.
Chapman goes into a combat stance and fires 5 bullets, 4 of which went into John. John kind of staggers into the Dakota and says, I've been shot, and collapses. The doorman grabs Chapman's arm and wrests the gun out of him and cries, do you know what you've done? Do you know what you've done?
To Chapman, he's done what he's set out to do. Punish the man behind the myth. A man who promoted love above all else, yet committed adultery. Who advocated for peace, but was violent. Who preached simplicity, yet lived a life of unparalleled luxury. Police rush John Lennon to Roosevelt Hospital, where he is pronounced dead at 11:07 p.m.
It has been established that Mark David Chapman had an obsession with John Lennon before he left Hawaii. Chapman signed out on his final day as a security guard with Lennon's name.
It's hard not to see Lennon's public execution by a fan as a kind of rock and roll crucifixion.
The following Sunday was the vigil in Central Park. I was just like part of the crowd taking the whole thing in. Maybe 100,000 people there.
It was like a president or a pope or a king died. It was like the end of an era for a lot of people.
John Lennon struggled his whole life to connect with others. Yet millions of people around the world felt intimately connected to him.
the simplicity and beauty of his message about giving peace a chance and all you need is love. I mean, this is something that has resonated with people for a very long time.
His music inspired many people to believe in a utopia, to believe in a better world. Then, for this sort of evil world to take away this idyllic voice, it was the loss of the hero.
While the public yearned to know the man, Lennon was always hiding behind the myth, never finding a complete satisfaction in life, always searching for something new.
As much as we'd love to believe that he was only the public persona, only the peace activist, only the great songwriter, like any human being, he was a dichotomy.
Leaving the world to wonder, what might have been had he lived up to his ideals?
I think Lennon would have grown into a wonderfully cantankerous and vivacious and spirited, no-nonsense elder statesman of rock and roll. The tragedy is we can't know.
Hollywood Scandals comes from the Dark Hollywood Collection at Reels Channel. To get more like this when you watch TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen and enter your zip code to find us on your system. You'll also find extras from the latest real crime programs that are only on Reels. Find Hollywood Scandals and its companions on Roku and Fire TV, too.